What's up, freaks? This rip of RHR is brought to you by our good friends at Strike. If you hold Bitcoin, you shouldn't have to sell it to access liquidity. Strike offers Bitcoin-backed loans with zero origination fees, zero early repayment fees, and zero liquidation fees. Your Bitcoin is securely held and returned within a business day after your loan is closed. A financial institution built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. That's what Strike is building. They're doing it for you. I use it every day. Go download Strike at strike.me. And use code RHR for $500 in fee-free Bitcoin stacking. Again, that's strike.me. Use the code RHR. You're going to get $500 in fee-free Bitcoin stacking. This episode, again, is sponsored by Strike.
This rip of RHR was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They produce the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet. It's got two secure enclaves. It's got a full screen, full keyboard here. As you can see, if you're watching, if you can't watch, just imagine something that looks like a BlackBerry. It allows you to create private public key pairs offline in an Aragat fashion. You never have to connect the Cold Card Q to an internet device. You can sign transactions and PSBTs remotely in the most secure fashion. If you're a Bitcoin Power user and you're looking for the best security, go pick up a Cold Card Q and go to coinkite.com. Find the Cold Card Q there. I think you can go to coldcard.com as well. Use the code RHR for 5% off. Step up your security. Get a Cold Card Q.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. If you're looking for a great way to make KYC-free sats, Stackwork has bounties. Go to stackwork.ai, find their bounties page, and contribute to the bounties. You can make Bitcoin KYC-free for completing the bounties. If you're a developer looking to scoop up some easy sats, go check out the bounties, contribute to them, and stack some sats. Stackwork.ai.
This rip was brought to you by our official electrolyte sponsor here at RHR, Salt of the Earth. You've been hearing Matt and I talk about it quite a bit. I drink multiple packets of it a day. You got to stay hydrated. That's why my face looks so good. So I'm getting buff. I'm able to get to the gym more because I'm hydrated. Matt, he's looking incredible. I'm sure you've all noticed it. You want to know why? Salt of the Earth, baby. Go to drinksote.com, use the code RHR, and you're going to get 15% off. I'm dead serious. It's made my life way better. My wife, she's right behind me right now laughing, but she's laughing because she knows it's true. She drinks like seven a day. I drink a few a day, maybe seven a day too. Matt, I don't even want to tell you how much he's drinking. It's good. It keeps you hydrated. It keeps you alert. Keeps you ready to go. Drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code RHR. For 15% off any order.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
What's up, freaks? Matt, what were your thoughts on the opener there? Better than the Nashville opener?
Thank you guys for stretching and joining us here tonight. We're really pleasure. It's a real pleasure to have you guys. I guess it's not tonight. No. It's 2 p.m. No. It's dark as fuck in here.
Yeah, it's a marathon. Time doesn't really exist in Vegas. You just kind of muddle through the best you can. Hope you go home with as little shame as possible on the flight. But we'll probably increase the shame at some point. Yeah, I think we're already doing
it.
Yo,
who brought the Pokemon cards?
Jerk, what's up with the Pokemon cards? There's actually a special bit to it. I don't know where he went, though. Guys, welcome. Thank you. Evan, I think that you've been to all three Hot Style Takeovers.
Yeah, it's been a real honor, a real privilege to get to participate in this year. It's like ridiculous. They let me bring a gun to the club.
I think we need to take it away from you. You're getting a little too...
Is your mic working?
Yeah. We're okay. Yeah. I'll speak louder.
Why are you just zapping 10 cents out at people?
All right, Matt wants me to break
tell
out
us
the
about
big
your
bills.
Guns.
All right, we'll go ahead, do an IRL zap later.
Do you want to tell us about your gun?
About my gun?
Yes.
Yeah, so I found a licensed firearm dealer. And, yeah, this cheap little things like $20 off Amazon, but it's loaded up with eCash notes. We've got 7 different designs, 3 of which you'll see here today, the rest of which will make an appearance during the conference. We're just giving out 6,000 bills of eCash. You scan it, you get to the new Zeus website. We got a brand new release of Zeus 13 out today, and it's got this new graduated wallet. So you start with Cashew eCash, and it yells at you as your balance increases, like, yo, this isn't a bank. Some European has control of your Bitcoin right now. And it gives you the option to upgrade to self-custody Lightning or swap out on-chain.
Am I the reason you added eCash to Zeus?
Are you the reason? No. But you've definitely been a factor in having my opinion change a little bit. Yeah, for sure.
Why is your opinion change? What's the use case or the user experience like?
So right now, if you want to self-custody on Lightning, you got to get a Lightning channel from the LSP, which is 6,000 or 7,000 sats, or you got to at least spend the on-chain fees to open up a channel, right? And, 6,000 or 7,000 sats might not be so much for all the whales in the room right now, but for the average person, do you really want to spend like $4 or $5 to try a new app out? So this is like a really awesome way to get rid of that cost, get a newcomer onto Bitcoin, have that aha moment with Lightning, see it settle a payment in an instant, and then you educate them as you go. It's the Bitcoin Sherpa in a wallet. It's the wallet that grows with you.
Right. David, thank you so much, Evan.
David Zeller, we're going to be able. Who's going to run the Mets?
Thank you, Evan.
There we go. Thank you all.
Evan, please leave. Evan, you're done.
I'm done?
Get off the stage.
You graduated.
Wait.
All right, let's bring up Eric Kaysen. Where's Eric?
Wait, Thomas.
There he is. Come on up.
You're a little too...
Huh?
You're a little too trigger happy.
Wait, is Thomas's
mic? It's over.
Is Thomas's mic louder than ours?
It better not be. It
comes with a chair.
So is Thomas, this a game show? What's going on here?
Yeah, now you're
the
up.
Cane?
Huh? Yes.
We get the cane from the bagpipe guy.
Yeah, we used to.
He's
do
not
it
just
Mariotti.
Like your Johnny Carson.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. What do you have?
Yo.
What do I have?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what I'm doing on stage. I'm a washed-up core developer.
All right, get him out of here.
James.
It's all right. I love
I'm
you.
I'm getting played off. What are you doing?
That was quick.
We got to keep it moving. All right, David Zell, thank you so much for sponsoring Bitcoin
hours.
Policy Institute.
Yeah. This is great for our brand. It's awesome. We're a serious organization. I'm a serious person. So are you. So are all of you. You're all serious. Round of applause for yourselves.
Yeah.
You're all extremely serious people.
You took the financial panopticon seriously.
Yeah.
You showed up to a conference to oppose just that.
Yeah.
All right.
What are we working on? What's the biggest issue?
Biggest issue? Shit, man.
Aliens. Wait. Okay, so...
I'm going to do it.
Can we get a huge round of applause for Thomas and PubKey for putting this whole thing together?
Woo!
Okay.
Do better.
Wait.
Do better. Come on. Give
more,
them a better round.
More!
Act like you mean
more.
It.
Now that we get that out of the way, he can go fuck himself for always putting himself in a more comfortable chair.
It's not me. I don't know.
You guys are able to frame Magus better because you have better posture.
Yeah, and trying to take over the conversation. David Zell was 14 years old when he came to me and said, I'm going to devote my life to keeping Bitcoiners out of the gulags. That is their number one KPI. That is the only thing Bitcoin Policy Institute cares about. And they've been doing a pretty damn good job. Now, has it been perfect? Obviously not. Like, we need to get the Samurai Devs out of jail. We need to get Tornado Cash out of the courtroom. But... if you go back 2 years, you go back 24 months, complete sea change in terms of what is the poly market trading at of me going to the gulag. And I just want to thank David for putting that all together. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thanks. Welcome.
All right, on that note, Eric, is it worth trying to prevent people from going to the gulag? Should we interact with the state?
Look, I wind up in the gulag no matter what. But it's just a matter of, like, how much time do we buy me before I get there?
What are you gonna have for dinner your first night in the gulag?
Hamstring.
Hamstring?
Hamstring.
Of the biggest guy in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you're just gonna focus on him.
Go straight for the leg.
Bite his jugular and rip it out, and then I'm just gonna eat the hamstring in front of everybody else.
And then you can have whatever you want for dinner in the gulag.
You've been to a gulag before.
Shit, man.
David's our real. He knows how this whole game plays, so that's why he's our inside man.
I invented the gulag.
David, why is Admiral Paparo saying that Bitcoin's proof of work consensus mechanism is going to secure?
He also said Bitcoin is good. He said Bitcoin
is good. It's a net positive. Is software thesis in play right now?
Actually, what's the dumbest shit you've heard? Like, Robert's rule of orders, but like, what's the dumbest shit you've heard come from a senator's mouth?
From a senator's mouth?
Yeah.
Be careful.
That if we had a de minimis tax exemption on Bitcoin, that crypto bros would invent a new cryptocurrency designed with the de minimis exemption so that they could create a new Bitcoin where no one would ever have to pay taxes ever again.
Sounds this is awesome. Eric coin, actually.
This is pretty much Eric coin.
No, wait, I'm not getting like shit coin. I'm sorry.
What is?
Yeah.
Well, the
is
point
Paul
is,
Stork behind this?
We no, you, like it's just retarded. Like that's just impossible. That's not how that works. Would be pretty funny.
Oh, is Paul not here?
No, that I know of.
All right. Let's get an audience survey. Raise your hand if you're going to hold Paul Stork's hard fork later this
wait,
year.
Wait, it's called eCash. It's supported in Zeus.
We got zero. Raise your hand if you're going to auto dump it. Not putting the private keys in the software.
Well, we're very grateful for the support that we've received from the Block family for tonight's event.
So, yeah.
Can we get a huge shout out for Cash App?
And Block, BitKey, Frodo,
the whole family, no matter how you interact with them. Supposedly, they're going to release a feature that just automatically adds it to your Bitcoin stack. It just sells Paul's fork for you.
Really?
Yeah. This is announced here today, right now.
Yeah, ID on stage.
Public company.
Auto fork dump.
And market hours are closed, yes.
Should we bring up Bitstein?
What?
Bring up Bitstein.
Bitstein?
Yeah.
That's who they named the BitKey after. Can we bring up Bitstein?
Bitstein.
Bugle.
Bitstein.
Everybody, show this man some respect. Let's get some claps here.
Thank you for that.
Wow.
Do you guys like BPI? I feel like you invented BPI.
I like BPI?
Yeah.
What's the best institute in Bitcoin? What's the best institute?
Well,
what's the better institute?
The original institute. the original institutional Bitcoin.
I'm a shareholder.
Satoshi Nakamoto Institute.
I'm a shareholder. I own Naka.
What was that?
I own Naka. I'm a shareholder of Nakamoto Institute.
By law, you're not allowed to be.
But
the IRS would come after me if I answered yes to that question.
And this is being recorded. Are cameras and microphones.
In all seriousness, though, Michael, I want you to join us today because I was at the Nakamoto Institute dinner in Austin, the first since 2018?
2019, yeah.
2019. Incredible dinner. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
But I thought the message that you put out there, what you're doing at the Nakamoto Institute now, particularly around trying to preserve the canon and the lore and the history of Bitcoin, it's something I don't think people realize has the potential to be lost in this world of AI slop.
It's already lost, bro. What?
I mean, there is a lot of stuff.
The new people
lost.
Don't appreciate our culture.
Well, explain this. What are you trying to do at Nakamoto Institute?
They don't even learn the language.
First of all, how many people here are familiar with the Nakamoto Institute?
Woo!
So, you know, one way that I think about how the Nakamoto Institute is changing, you know, the website's been up since 2013, and, you know, a lot of people have read it in that time. Up until now, it was very much a sort of exclusive website. It was very curated of here are the things that, you know, we want people to read. These are the most important cypherpunk essays and stuff like that. And the way that we're kind of shifting now is that I want to have everything. We are entering the age of AI slop. of, you know, we have lots of informational warfare and psyops and all of that. It's very hard to figure out, you know, what is the true historical record of Bitcoin. And the further we go into this AI age, the harder it's going to become to pick out the true historical record of Bitcoin. And so on that basis, I am working on creating what I call the Library of Bitcoin, the Library of Congress for Bitcoin, to be able to store everything that I can in there so that we have that for perpetuity. So where we're trying to explain Bitcoin to future generations, we still have the original preserved materials that all of these ideas were springing forth from.
Are you storing it on chain, and is it BIP-110 compliant?
This is all going on chain. No. we will be using open timestamps purposefully because that is the least amount of on-chain data that we can possibly use to have verifiable decentralized timestamps of the information. So we will be using that to help with the creating tamper evidence so that you can see that the document that you're downloading in 2076 is the same one that was timestamped in 2026 and hasn't been altered since. So you know that it's the true document that people actually cared about. It was not altered by some AI hallucinating somewhere.
I was going to say, Eric, you've been around for a while.
Wait. 1 second.
Okay.
Is no, open timestamps actually, is does that work with BIP-110 or...
Does
BIP-110 block open timestamps?
I've had my head down focused on this, so I've missed some of the most recent dramas in Bitcoin land. So BIP-110, is it getting rid of op return?
Yes.
Okay, so theoretically that would get rid of being able to use that for open timestamps. I believe theoretically there is a way that you can use it with a Taproot transaction that would actually...
I think it's getting rid of Taproot, too.
Totally?
I'm mostly fucking around.
Because...
It's kind of neutering Taproot, though, yeah, if it got passed.
But, like, if you had a tap leaf that's empty, you can fill it with the hash.
So no matter what, you're going to pollute the chain with our history.
Well, so with that one, you would... if. Hopefully with that Taproot transaction, that path would never even be revealed to the chain. So you theoretically would never even need to actually put the hash on chain in order to do it. It would just be sort of embedded within the script hash. But you would have the treasure map to it. So no, like the Nakamoto Institute does not stand for bloating the chain. And we are happy to use as little information as possible.
Give it up for the Nakamoto Institute.
All right, fuck off now.
Well, I wanted a little back and forth. You're a little
Alex Leishman, please come up to the stage.
Trigger happy with the.
Give it up for Alex.
Bagpiper here.
Woo!
Trigger happy with it.
It's Leishman.
Leishman, sorry. It's Leishman. So the
wait,
correspondence dinner was a time traveler. Can we talk about this?
Oh yeah. What do we think?
What Matt?
Marty has a question.
Well, I was going to ask Eric a question, but Eric, you've been around for a while. What are your thoughts about preserving Bitcoin history, how the narratives have changed? What is the importance of what the Nakamoto Institute is doing in your mind?
In my mind, they sort of maintain the legitimacy of like where our roots came from, the things that we were worried about. In 2050, like shitcoining is going to be like a really secondary thing, and it's going to be like, why the fuck would you use like retard coin or whatever? We need to have the history of like why we came to Bitcoin as being our single source of truth and what it is. So the fact that the Nakamoto Institute has continued to curate that has been an important thing. Yeah. And me and Michael, this was the first time we actually met earlier today.
You haven't
met? Just in line. I was like, oh, hey, what's up? It was like, oh, shit. Yeah, like we know each other. Yeah. So that was nice.
All right. Now on to the most important story of the week, the time traveler who bombarded President Trump in D.C., Alex Leishman, what do we think? Was it a time traveler?
Wait, is this
real? I got to be honest. That hadn't even crossed my mind.
All right.
I think I'm not far enough down the rabbit hole here.
Walk us through what happened.
You're the one who brought it up. You want to walk everybody through? I can if you want me to.
Yeah, do the thing. Tell the story.
Yeah, like what's the whole thesis? So like why was someone sent back in time right then and there, and how did that come about?
I don't know the whole thesis, but the story is some man created a Twitter account in 2014. He posted one tweet. It was the name of the guy who Naruto run through the press dinner the other night.
But they worked together, didn't they?
They worked together at NASA. They were working on jet propulsion stuff. The guy whose name of the Twitter account has been lost for like 4 years. The banner picture was an abstraction.
Okay, that's schizo. I'm sorry. That's retarded. If he were a time traveler,
wow,
then he would be able to look back in time and see that the assassination attempt failed and then not do that.
This is where it gets like, really schizo.
But maybe that's the whole point.
Yes, exactly.
To have a secondary failed assassination attempt on Trump to make it clear that the threat against Trump is real.
Okay, wait. I'm going to bring this back to reality. Leishman, I saw you commenting online earlier this week about the amazing story of how you came up with the name River. Do you want to share it with the crowd?
Oh, well, yeah, I wish I had a better story. But we got sued. So we used to be called something else and some other company. We used to be called Alto Financial. And it was a really shitty domain. It was Alto.financial. Honestly, I couldn't come up with anything better. And then someone was like, so this other company was like, hey, you can't use that name. We're using it. You got to stop or we're going to sue you. And I was just like, yeah, honestly, the name kind of sucks. So we're going to find a better one. And yeah, we just kind of found River was for sale. We raised some money before then so we could afford it. And that's why we're called River, honestly. I was thinking, no one hates rivers, so... Can't go wrong with this one.
No one hates rivers.
Yeah. Let the sats flow. Let the sats flow.
Yeah, let the sats flow. Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of good metaphors now. So, a good .com. Like I was like, well, no one knows who we are. So a short .com makes people think we've been around a while.
That's a great domain name.
Thank you.
Great domain pickup.
Yeah.
Switching topics, though, you've been very outspoken about prediction markets in crypto apps.
Oh yeah.
Let's expand on this. Why do you hate prediction markets?
Yeah, I'm giving a little talk on this tomorrow. I mean. I don't hate prediction markets. I don't hate gambling. I mean, we're in Vegas, right? I hate just dishonesty and people being disingenuous. Like these apps, we're democratizing finance. You know, we're helping people build their wealth, and like they're just throwing bet on the Super Bowl, bet on March Madness. So I think it's really just like the fakeness that I don't like.
So you don't like that Coinbase added prediction markets, but like Polymarket's fine.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
Because Polymarket is a prediction market.
Like, yeah, like I don't really like Polymarket. Like whatever, right? Like it's interesting. Like it is actually genuinely.
It's kind of awesome.
Prediction markets on actual events are genuinely interesting. The whole just like, oh, this isn't sports betting. It's a commodity contract and it's a legitimate investment is all just bullshit. And I think like it's just like annoying that no one's honest about this.
Well, it's like the slopification of finance in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
Let's bet on whether or not this toad hops in the left or the right.
Bugle him off. Get out of here. It's not the slopification of finance. That's ridiculous.
All right. I love you all.
Finance was already slopified.
Thank you, Eric. Round of applause for Eric.
Did I just...
Let's bring up Matt Keita. Probably Matt Keita next.
Oh, no.
Where's Matt? Come on.
But now that he's not on stage, I think it's kind of cool that we have... prediction markets now. Hello? Like it's an actual real way to have some semblance of truth in the clown world.
The Oracle problem has not been solved.
You don't have to solve the problem. But you don't have to solve the Oracle problem is a regulatory issue.
I think that insider trading is like money
insider
laundering
trading doesn't exist.
It's just a thought crime. Like it should be legal to insider trade and you should know the future. And I think the only challenge I have with prediction markets is yes, everyone has an incentive to the right answer until you remember that some people need to hedge. And there are like large markets where you might actually take the other side of that view because or the thing you don't think is going to happen, you might put a lot of money in that market because in a different market you are exposed to, you know, being wrong. And so hedging activity is tough, but I think it's good. Like we should all know what's going on in the world and like capitalism and markets are the best way we know of of doing that.
I just want to be very deliberate about how I use my words here. But I feel like people do not appreciate how absolutely wild it is that there's a $10 billion plus valued company, Polymarket, that has an investor that's the New York Stock Exchange, that literally has an assassination market on Trump right now. Like, it's Trump out by April 30th.
He could be impeached.
Oh, interesting.
No, he could be impeached, but he could also be assassinated, and that would pay out.
Yeah. No, I think that is fucking insane.
Like, that is fucking wild.
No, they won't pay out.
Kalshi won't
pay out. No. Polymarket pays out. They assassinated all the Iranian leadership, and Polymarket just sent you your USDC.
Yeah, Kalshi ended up rugging that one.
I do think, though, there's a second-order effect that we haven't maybe fully realized yet, which is, like, it's not the financialization of the real world. Changes the real world, right? And it's not like this isolated thing where, oh, now we know the truth. It's like actually this thing starts to influence how people behave as well. It's reflexive. So like, for example, right, politicians giving speeches and saying a word in a speech because they know there's a market outcome for it,
right,
changes behavior.
And when you think about it, every single prediction market that involves another human being is inherently an assassination market on them. I mean, there's an old paper that was like the politics of assassination markets from like way back in the day. And that was sort of, I read this like 6 or 7 years ago, but like, I remember the main sort of point that guy made was like, if you have any, conditional event in the future that's premised on an individual being alive, i.e., will Kobe Bryant score, will some athlete score more than 10 points tomorrow? If they're dead, they can't do it. So any single prediction market that involves a human doing something in the future is an assassination market on that human.
Can we get a huge round of applause for David Zell?
Thank you, David. We're going to leave it there. Thank you, David. No, get off the stage. Here, have some Pokemon.
Matthew Keita.
Hello.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well.
I still can't get over the goblin guy. I don't think I'll...
Yeah,
ever,
how do you...
I don't think I'll ever be the same.
What makes you wake up one day and you say, you know what, my shtick's going to be the goblin guy?
He met Jerk and he's like, what would be Jerk's wet dream? And it's a comedian dressed as a goblin.
I was looking for Jerk during that whole set. I couldn't find him.
He was laughing too hard. Where is Jerk? Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
We got two suits now.
James O'Bearn, let's bring you back up. I think you got the short end of the stick last time.
Yeah, he did.
Everybody give it up for James O'Bearn.
Can we get a huge round of applause for James?
James will be on the tables behind us in a little bit. James.
I gotta make a clarification. It's O'Bearn. O'Bearn. Okay. This guy probably knows.
I'm messing up everybody's name.
Maybe he does. This guy's probably like Guatemalan or something.
Wait, can we actually talk about Bitcoin for a second?
James, what are your thoughts on quantum risk? Is it 10 years out?
Quantum?
What a leading question.
Quantum is like drunk fan fiction written by institutional scientists and NIST. Quantum is like, I think I have an outstanding one Bitcoin bet that quantum is never coming. Or at least not by 2030.
Yeah.
Leishman, respond.
My gut tells me that's true. but I don't know enough about... You know what I feel like with the quantum thing is I feel like a boomer being told that enterprise blockchain is going to be like a really big deal. And my instincts tell me it's not, but I lack the detailed...
Oh, you're not a quantum physicist?
Yeah, sadly not. My instincts tell me it's a nothing burger, but my logical brain is like, well, even if technically it's probably a nothing burger, it's a mimetic attack on Bitcoin, and we need to have the mimetic defense. So therefore, like, the logical answer is either way, we should invest in a post-quantum signature scheme, at least, not even necessarily hard fork it, but we should have a good one ready and implemented and like tested and battle tested. And that's my two cents.
So I agree with that. My only refinement, or not even refinement, but like my objection to that would be the more that we give it attention and space, the more we reinforce the severity of the perceived threat.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like, you know, someone saying aliens are coming, you know, in 5 years, we need to absolutely harden our grid to withstand, you know, we need to devote like 40% of humanity to hardening the grid against the alien EMP attack or something. And it's like, if you can at some level just like reject the premise of the argument, then you're going to be giving more credence to everything. But Tad Shreya, along those lines, Tad Shreya has an interesting point that, like, maybe all the quantum attention will actually spur some kind of classical innovation in algorithms that winds up breaking or harming ECDSA somehow. And so, you know, maybe having these hash-based backup schemes that Jonas Nick is working on reducing proof size for, you know, maybe that's good. But I think it just rankles me because I'm a curmudgeon, you know, to begin with. And I just see this, like, absolutely moronic argument being put forward.
Yeah.
I think we should bring up Shinobi. Shinobi's going to have some stuff to add.
Shinobi, come on
here.
Up.
Shinobi, come on up.
No. Play the
Ladies and gentlemen, big round of applause for Shinobi.
This
the son of
guy.
Jasmine and Aladdin.
Thanks a lot, asshole. How am I supposed to drink the first beer I just got now?
Look, drink it through your mask.
You don't have monster. Any credibility. You bought the Project 11 thing like wholesale as soon as it came out.
Hey, that was based on talking to Reardon for like 5 minutes. I put that on Reardon.
Shinobi, how would you describe this week and the progression of the quantum debate with the Q Day bounty being paid out?
I don't know. It was like you know, somebody getting on stage, going to make a big announcement, and then they slipped and spilled their beer all over themselves, and looks like they pissed their pants. They just stand there, don't know what's going on or what to do.
I can't really hear you, but I'm glad you're protected from COVID.
Fuck you.
COVID's over.
Yeah, what material is that on your face?
Is that an N95?
Is it latex?
No.
You're sucking in microplastics right now, dude.
Okay. Pineapples can get through it.
Nice.
You guys will get that one when something hits Twitter in a day or two.
So you were a little upset this morning. Do you want to tell everybody what happened?
No.
Okay. Did you quit?
We'll see.
Wait a second. Did these flip down?
No, that's just a lot less annoying than having them bumping up from underneath.
You look like a special operator.
That's
like, is that night vision gear?
Are your eyes working, James? Like,
so where do we go from here? After the quantum threat, what's going to be the next big threat for Bitcoin?
Coming to terms with the fact that Bitcoin is ossified, you're all in denial, and acceptance feels nice. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, no disagreements there, honestly.
Wait, if it's ossified, then how's BIP 110 going to happen?
They're going to make a shitcoin.
Are we going to? So you're saying we're not going to get BIP 54 even?
Probably not.
I personally think we need to start some SHA-256 FUD. Just like take it to the next level. Like, oh, you think quantum's bad? SHA-256 is going to get cracked.
Hey, there's no proof it works.
Yeah,
there
exactly.
is no proof it works.
There's no proof it works.
Wait, can we?
We don't know. Like P equals NP is a, you know, like, you know, the biggest threat to Bitcoin.
Wait, jokes aside. I kind of feel like BIP 110 is bringing like the next great era of Bitcoin hard forks.
I don't think it's that big.
Let's
pray.
Dude, the only block they find is going to be a real Bitcoiner just throwing hash rate at them to troll them. Like,
no,
your one block. Have fun.
We're divorced now. So I think their soft fork will fail, and then they will do a hard fork. And then at the same time, Paul is going to do a hard fork, and Saylor is going to do a hard fork for Quantum with BlackRock. It's like it's a great new era of hard forks.
Who is
like
that?
I feel like everyone should appreciate that.
Who was
like,
the Bitcoin private guy? Rhett? What was his last name?
Oh, my God. Rhett Crichton.
Who?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He did like 5 hard forks. He made out like a bandit. Bitcoin private.
And he never
Bitcoin,
went to the gulags.
Never went to the gulag. That was a crazy era.
I mean,
yep.
It was impressive.
I do miss getting dividends.
I don't. The statute of limitations just finally expired. Like, why are we doing this all over again?
Wait, Alex, since you're up here, how is River going to handle eCash.com?
eCash.com. You know, I just found out about that today. I've been sort of selectively listening on Twitter recently. So we're talking about a fork of Bitcoin. Honestly, I haven't really been paying attention to this because I like can't get enough energy to care.
Not waiting the whole time.
You're not going to state your official company policy on stage right now?
No.
Do it.
I'm a nothing ever happens chud.
Do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Nothing ever happens.
That's my policy. My policy is nothing
right
ever happens.
You're getting cornered on stage. What's River's official policy?
Have the last 3 months proven that nothing ever happens.
If you have Bitcoin at River and there's ever an economically viable fork, we'll do our best to deliver the value to you, right? That's like, you know, we will do our best to give you your money in a fair way.
Is it money, though? Not shitcoins?
Your value. Your, yeah.
We're really entertaining the guys in the front row here. They're enthralled.
All right, thank you, Alex. Alex.
Thank you.
Alex Leishman, everybody.
Yeah, let's do a mass bugle.
All right, please welcome to the stage, Drew Armstrong.
Oh, there we
Drew,
go.
Drew, where are you?
Look at this handsome devil.
Oh, baby.
Here, open these. Open that one.
Got to catch them all.
Tell everybody what you got.
How are we doing, gents?
Fantastic. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. It sounds like you've been smoking a couple packs of American Spirits a day since I've seen
no,
you last.
American Spirits, but I did lose my voice. I was at the White House correspondence, not the dinner, the weekend before this.
Are you pissed you missed the dinner?
We cut out and
so
the
you
tweet.
Can definitively verify that it was in fact not me, Naruto, running past security.
Can we get
we were about to land in Vegas when we saw the news on Twitter.
Guys,
it was pretty
gentlemen,
crazy.
What happened to Hit Send? I missed that podcast. What's going on with it?
HitSend is really hard to schedule around Aubrey's travel schedule, which is the biggest barrier to the consistency of HitSend. But we'll bring it back. But now Drew has a fancy corporate job. Are you still a Bitcoin miner?
We still mine Bitcoin.
How much?
For now. How much Bitcoin do we mine?
How much of the bandwidth is actually for Bitcoin?
Not very much. But I think this is actually good. I think the lamest attack vector of Bitcoin was always like the corporate miners. And so I think it's actually very nice that the corporate miners are selling out of being Bitcoin mining sellouts. And now the mining is going elsewhere to parts of the world that auditors from the big four can't even fathom.
Where is it going? Like, where are these miners that are shifting to AI selling their ASICs to?
I'm not a Bitcoin miner anymore. I don't even know. But I think I'm told I'm told South America, I'm told Africa, I'm told all kinds of places that the people who tell me have never been.
The Mars. Global South.
I had a Bitcoin sign guy in my basement on Saturday. And
sorry to hear that.
I recently, it was great.
What do you mean had him? Like you took him or took delivery
captive.
Of him?
A little bit of a
basement?
Blood boy.
Look, we've known each other for a long time.
You ever see the movie Saw?
But
it's where James gets his peptides.
I was showing him a GPU thing that I built, and he looked at it and he said, "Oh, is this one of those hentai miners?" I thought that was good.
What's your GPU setup? What are you running the GPU for?
I've got something hentai like 400 gig of VRAM.
Oh, shit.
I got the RTX 6000s. Don't tell my wife.
I think she knows.
She just assumes I'm doing the worst possible thing with our money at any given time.
Are her assumptions correct?
Which is buying oil contracts right now.
Look, he's learning.
All right, it's time. Thank you, James.
And second, can we get rid of Shinobi, too? Shinobi, you're off, too.
Everybody,
what?
James.
You know what? Yeah, just so I can finish my beer. Fuck you.
We appreciate you. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Shinobi. Okay. It was time for him to go anyway.
I'm happy that James is buying oil contracts with him and his wife's money. I think it's every man needs to go through like a there will be blood phase in his life.
Yes.
Where they want to LARP as an oil man. I think this is spiritually healthy And everyone needs to do it at least once.
Just don't make the mistake of buying the futures contracts where you have to deliver it if the price goes against you, James. I think that would be...
Yes, don't lose money on it. Make money on it, and then it's a good experience. I agree.
You're not married yet, right?
No, correct. I'm not married.
Fair enough. Got it. Great advice.
Thomas, what are you doing with PubKey these days? What's happening with PubKey? What is
I can't
this
hear a word you're saying.
What's going on with PubKey these days?
Yeah, DC. How's DC going? Yeah.
DC's going great. I think next up for us is going to be Philadelphia and Austin, Texas.
Ooh, Philadelphia.
Wow, Austin, huge Texas. Surprises.
Yeah. But a PubKey in every city except for Boston. I think that Austin, Texas is a very good fit for us. It's turned into the comedy and podcast capital of America. So for the media side of the business, why wouldn't they like Asian fusion variety show like what? This one every night
Asian
in Austin.
Fusion?
Asian fusion.
Is we're that in, just because we're at Tao?
We're in Tao.
Yes. Yeah.
The best dive bar in Las
Vegas.
That was
Vegas. The joke. Yeah. We'll have the Benihana guy DJ.
I can't believe they let us in here.
What's been the biggest surprise opening DC specifically?
Biggest surprise opening DC is the previous restaurant was Hill Country Barbecue. They were there for 16 years.
Oh, I like Hill Country.
The most unfathomable rat infestation. We had to deal with that.
We had a
rat genocide before we were able to actually open.
Are they
the
gone?
Doors.
Are they gone?
They're gone.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't know about the other Hill Country locations that are currently open and serving food to the public, but they're gone from the one that used to be Hill Country.
It was pretty bad, and they were there for 16 years, so people really loved Hill Country Barbecue. And on Blue Sky, they were saying our most popular cocktail was going to be the Molotov cocktail because it was like the Bitcoiners moving in and getting rid of this like horribly mid like barbecue restaurant. But so far, so good. We haven't had a Molotov yet.
How much blackmail is happening at PubKey DC?
How much what?
Blackmail.
We have a lot of politicians coming through. So far, we haven't had any whoopsies, I would say. Tortilla Coast was known for the whoopsies. That's in Capitol Hill.
What were their whoopsies?
Who was his name? Ryan from Wisconsin?
Oh, Paul Ryan?
Yeah, Paul Ryan. I think his career started and ended at the Tortilla Coast in Capitol Hill.
Wait, really? That's how that
The town is literally Veep. If you've seen the show Veep, like DC is the exact same thing. It's fun. It's a good time.
Philadelphia. I think it's going to be much better than DC, I will say, as a local Philadelphian myself.
Philadelphia is going to be great. It's not going to be as big as PubKey in DC, but a little bit closer to New York City. And it's dive bars. Hopefully we can get Sigs inside.
All do right. we have 500 people in attendance tonight?
I thought it was six.
At least six.
Yeah.
I think it was 600.
Can we get a huge round of applause for yourselves?
Yeah.
I'm making it through this.
A round of applause, everybody out there.
Thank you guys for joining us.
A big round of applause for the Goblin and the Convict. Thank you guys so much. You guys worked with a hard room. You got through a hard room.
Did we pay them with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think so. Did we pay in Bitcoin? No.
Nah. What'd you pay in?
Dirty fiat.
Tether gold?
We try to hold the Bitcoin. You know, people that buy the burgers and the dogs, we hold on to that Bitcoin.
Somebody was saying we should rename this to the sausage style takeover.
This is actually pretty good for a Bitcoin conference. There's like a decent
dozen.
Ratio.
There's
yeah.
a dozen I mean, girls here.
I think there's 200 ladies here.
It's here for the ladies.
Can you raise your hand if you're a lady? Look at all the hands. There's like 200 hands out there.
All right, let's bring up Peter. Everybody, big round of applause for Peter McCormick.
The British Joe Rogan. Yo, Pete. Hey, good to see you, bro. Oh, two mics.
Who am I talking to?
Whoever you want.
Hey!
Yo, good
Hello,
to see
sir.
You, bro.
We're over here, too. Yo,
look at that smile. That really made it worth it.
How was your flight over here?
I've been five flights in the last 6 days.
Did you fly okay? private?
No. No, I didn't fly
I private. Heard in Britain, like, it's like 10K. Like, then you're rich over there. So
we're poor in the poorest U.S. state. We are poorer than Mississippi.
That's pretty bad, bro.
City of London. Isn't that where you guys have that festival?
Did you ever talk to Tom Luongo about how you guys control everything?
No, it's not.
All right. We also need to call up David Zell.
David, are you here?
There's a strategy here, I feel like.
I don't know where David is, but we're going to go to the Bitcoin Bugle Boys.
Wait, can we call up my director buddy?
Sure. Yeah.
Can we call up Eugene? Absolutely. Let's call up Eugene. Eugene, up. Are you out there?
I think they might have left.
No, he's here somewhere overthinking things.
Okay.
Eugene made an amazing Assange film.
You've seen it. What's your teaser for the film here?
He gets freed.
I mean, we all know that.
It's a spoiler.
All right. I don't know where David is, but...
it's a very compelling documentary. Come on. There we go. Here's Eugene. Let's get a huge round of applause for Eugene.
And also, the headliner for the Hostile Takeover, I'm super, super excited to have Mr. Curtis Yarvin here with us, the architect of the cathedral. Let's give it up for Curtis.
Also,
do we have microphones for you guys? Yeah, here we go. Thank you, Dirk.
Curtis.
And the Bugle Boys behind us are going to be chirping in, kind of like the critics in the Muppets is what we designed for this bit.
And Aaron.
Curtis, I hope you know in Bitcoin you're known as the guy who radicalized Peter McCormick.
Wow.
Aaron's better half over there. Worse half.
How did the interview come together for you and Curtis? Because now you've done two parts. And they're both quite long-winded.
Wait, Peter. Is Curtis the reason you became a far-right extremist?
It's part of it. Also living in the UK.
Also reality.
We are the cathedral. So Thomas wants me to thank him. But really, it's down to American Hoddle. American Hoddle and I went for a steak here in Las Vegas a while back, and I was complaining about the state of the UK, and he said something along the lines is, you're now ready for Curtis Yarvin, and said, go and watch the Tucker interview. So I watched the Tucker interview, and I think I watched every interview I could find over about 48 hours, and then you and I spoke because you'd mentioned Curtis, and then...
I think I mentioned the Caribbean Rhythms episode that Curtis was on, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Total body pubic.
Yeah. And I was listening to these podcasts, and I was like, everything makes sense now in the UK. So we met up. We did our first interview, which was 4 hours, which we were drinking through. Which was good fun.
And it's great because you have more sponsor roles that you can do in that big window.
Big shout out to... and then we did a second one in London. I've become a free market fascist.
What do you think of British politics these days, Peter? Is there any hope?
I don't think there's hope with any politics. I think anyone who believes in the political system... is a status cuck.
I fucking love this. What a great timeline.
Curtis, you had some choice words for how Elon is handling X this morning on his platform. You don't think he's leveraging it the way he should be. Why is this?
Well, I think because he's a libertarian. I think he bought X kind of out of a reflex of like seeing that there was a lot of power here. But sort of what I said, you know, I was quoting someone who said he bought X and turned it into like this incredible slot machine, you know, sort of run on Silicon Valley principles of, you know, whatever gets the most engagement is the best. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you didn't buy this to make money. You bought this to make power, right? It's like you don't really have a shortage of money. In fact, I suspect that the $44 billion would have been better used. So to buy this to sort of make power and then sort of use it the way you're using it, it's like you gave, you know, an uncontacted tribesman from the Amazon an AK-47. And he sees the incredible power of this destructive instrument, but he doesn't have any idea which end the bullets come out of. And so he just has the coolest club in the tribe. And yeah, he's basically using an AK-47 as a war club. And I'm like,
I'd watch that TV show.
Well, this is an extension of something you said, too, about how the left and the right use power. What were you, something about alcoholics, the way they...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the problem is that the left looks at the right and they're just, like, terrified because they look at the right and they're just like, these guys could just crush us instantly. They could crush us instantly. We could be crushed, like, you know. And what they don't realize is that essentially they're carnivores... and the right is herbivores. And it's like a leopard worrying that an elephant is going to eat it. Like, the elephant is not going to eat you. Like, the elephant is fundamentally herbivorous. And so when you see someone like, you know, the various people on the right that kind of dabble in power politics in various ways, and they're like, I want this, I want that, we should have free markets, something, something, something. And they sort of think when they look at leftists, because leftists want this, they want that, they have this ideology, they have that ideology, like we should do that too. They don't understand that a leftist, when it comes to power, is like an alcoholic, because they will drink anything that contains alcohol. And, you know, they will switch on a dime, they will reverse their ideas. Sometimes they're for blood and soil nationalism, as in Ukraine. Sometimes they're all John Lennon imagined, like, you know, small world. Actually, the funniest leftist slogan that I ever saw was from a general strike in South Africa about 100 years ago that was called the Rand Revolt. And you had communists carrying around placards that said, "Workers of the world unite," to keep South Africa white. And that was leftism for them at that time, right? And so they can believe in anything, and we're like, oh, I like this, I like that. Oh, you know, this wine, it's a little acid. Oh, it's a 2013 Bordeaux. Oh yeah, the 2014s were much better, right? So we basically care about alcohol the way wine snobs care about alcohol, and then we're fighting for possession of the alcohol with a bunch of fucking alcoholics. You know, who, nonetheless, these alcoholics can talk very, they can really get expressive about the qualities of the wine. They'll be like, oh, this has a rich aroma of venison and carrots, you know, or something, something. They're really trying to convince you that they like the taste, but they just like the power. But we actually are all just about the taste. And so we have all these different opinions about what should we eat? What tastes good tonight? Whatever, whatever, whatever. And our enemies just want to eat.
Wait, so Curtis, from your opinion on the Twitter piece, like, what is the ideal Elon X situation for you? Is it something that looks more like Gab? Should he be putting more of his?
Fundamentally, the thing for X that creates its power is quality. It's not reach, it's quality. And he had the opportunity to produce an alternate intellectual aristocracy there above the old blue check elite. He actually should have kept the old blue check elite because he had those people by the balls. He had a credential that they needed professionally that was being very poorly managed. Instead, he just had them by the balls and he's like, oh, well, in my ideology, we don't hold people by the balls. And he let them go. And then absolutely, basically, wound up prioritizing whatever gets the most engagement, which is basically like slop that has, you know, no value at all.
Marty,
so Elon is basically single-handedly through X created what we now call the retard right, you know, which is basically right-wing slop from end to end. And, you know, it was just like literally like if he had been working for his worst enemy, I don't think he could have done a much better job. Maybe by not buying Twitter at all. I mean, and he, of course, had to be forced to buy it, you know, in the end, which is not exactly the, you know, act of a seriously ambitious person. So,
Do you have a Blue Sky account? I feel like you would be phenomenal on Blue
Sky.
I
do not have a Blue Sky
account. You ever thought about just diving in there?
Not enough hours in the day. You know, really the ideal solution would be, and it's a pity because actually, like, you know, if we could give the libs not only Mars, but also Blue Sky, they could all go to Mars and they could do Blue Sky on Mars and we could keep Earth. I think that would be ideal.
Getting the crystal. You're going in.
Yeah, they have crystals on Mars, that's for sure. But no, you know, he's just like, he's stuck in the 90s. He lives in the 90s. You know, he's a 90s person. Elon has complete 90s brain. I lived in the 90s too. It's an amazing time. Most of you will never experience it. But, you know, he has 90s brain. That's all I can say.
Eugene. We have Eugene here. He's in the middle of Peter and Curtis over here. We just threw him into the deep end. He's a new Bitcoiner, by the way. So can we all just welcome Eugene to the Bitcoin community? Eugene, you've been spending a decade documenting Julian Assange and everything he's been going through. What are your thoughts on freedom of speech and the internet? And also, you know, what have you been working on?
Thank you a lot. I think working on the cause of Julian Assange has really been working on a much bigger cause of freedom itself, truth itself, both of which are really under assault. We were supposed to enter this wonderful new era, and we've instead entered an era that looks more and more frighteningly like feudalism, monarchy, oligarchism, all the oppressions that mankind went through. So honestly, when I follow Julian Assange, what I didn't realize was how current the story would be. I thought I was going to figure out the real true story of what had happened behind the scenes a decade ago. But what happened at that point was that the story morphed into something terribly current. And that was what actually brought me to Jack Dorsey. And the reason we're presenting this week is because obviously Jack sees in the film, and I hope everybody gets a chance to see the film, but also see the presentation that Jack and I are doing on Wednesday at the Nakamoto stage, because what we're doing is bringing the film in front of audiences to deal with the fact that it's so incredibly current. We won the Cannes Film Festival, we won a Golden Globe with the film, but that sounds great, it doesn't mean shit, because if the mainstream media doesn't want to show it, they're not going to show it. If it doesn't fit their narrative, they're going to marginalize you. And I'm here because Jack made it possible to get that story in front of what he believes is the best audience, which is Bitcoiners themselves, because Bitcoin has a shared legacy with WikiLeaks. That shared legacy happened in 2011 when the US government blocked WikiLeaks from getting money through fiat, through credit cards, so that it could live and survive and keep telling the public the truth. And it was at that point that Julian Assange accepted Bitcoin. And it was a brand new development for Bitcoin, where Bitcoin could prove the power that it has to promote freedom. And it also allowed WikiLeaks to continue. So I didn't realize that long investigation into, there's torture, there's illegal spying. My movie is like a spy thriller. I didn't know it would lead me to a room with all of you with relevance to the conversations you all have about sort of freedom tech and everything else that tries to ensure a better world through, for example, Bitcoin.
You know, when I first, Julian first came onto my radar screen, it was quite a while ago, and you know, the first thing that I saw of his, which is the first thing a lot of people saw, was the collateral murder thing, where there was a case of, I believe, an attack helicopter shot someone who was a journalist who he thought was carrying a rocket launcher, but it was actually a video camera. And you know, when Assange was going after the Pentagon, you know, I had this kind of negative reaction because he does what everyone who goes after the Pentagon does. He pretends that they're this sort of dark force controlling the world, and actually, you know, messing with the Pentagon is doing something very dangerous and brave and bold, and DOD will come on down on you like a ton of bricks, which I knew to be entirely a fantasy. And of course, at that time, he was very popular with the legacy media and all of these things. And I thought he was being a little bit cynical about that. And then when the WikiLeaks thing came out, I realized that I was quite wrong about that, because he did not seem to understand the difference between the State Department and DOD. My father worked for State, so State is something that I know reasonably well. And instead of sort of, he'd sort of been playing this like very standard lefty media game, and then he basically does something that the State Department, which really matters, did not like. And, you know, and he was sort of cooperating with media on redaction a little bit, and of course, but those links between the State Department and prestige media and foundations and universities are very tight. And they were ready to accept him as a member of that establishment. And he did not want to play ball. And leaking State Department cables was really beyond the pale. And then, so he basically went from becoming someone who was sort of playing pretend in a way, because when you leak DOD stuff, you have no real enemies. And then suddenly he had real enemies. And oh my God, was there a difference? Like, did he, how did he react to that difference in a way? Does he sense that difference? Does he sort of understand that when you go after the right, you're sort of playing wiffle ball, but when you go after the left, you've got real bats and balls out there?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I can't speak for him, but I can tell you that the efforts of WikiLeaks against the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, which was a war that had been sort of driven by Cheney and people like that, but had been rubber stamped by the Democrats, was motherhood to everybody in Washington. So there was a brief moment where Julian looked like he could be sort of popular by revealing things about the Iraq War, but it was very quick that he was also absolutely hammered by the same sort of usual suspects in the Democratic Party as the Republican Party. When he saw that, it then came to WikiLeaks, this huge trance of diplomatic cables from the State Department. One of the things I think you're alluding to is the release of unredacted material. That actually is something you have to see the film. We revised that story because the truth of what happened is actually that it was not WikiLeaks who revealed it, and the people who did are in the film. So it's a very jarring revelation in the film, but it probably tells you he was more prepared to be a redacting good boy with the State Department, and it was others who actually leaked the unredacted stuff. Whether that tells you anything, what it really does say overall is, I think he grew up politically as this went on, when we all kind of discovered that the system itself is fucked. It's not really one side better than the other. That, I think he's pretty clear on that. He was put in jail. He was kept in an embassy by both parties, you know, over a decade and a half. You know, he's learned very hard the lesson you're describing, I think. But the film has shattering new information. It's why we made it, on a lot of what happened to him and also from him and about him.
Yeah, you definitely...
But it's a good question. I've never had that question
yeah,
before.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to fuck with those people.
Yeah.
And
did they have a... Do you have the mic?
Were they successful in exerting a chilling effect?
I think two things happened at the same time.
For more context, like, WikiLeaks was something that really attracted me to Bitcoin. The fact that they were able to accept Bitcoin.
Yes.
WikiLeaks, you had Snowden. It seems like there's been a bit of a reprieve from actors like that getting this information out.
Sure. I mean, Snowden is in our film, and it was interesting to interview him because it was kind of like going to Batman and interviewing him about Superman. Because these are the two guys who are like the heroes of those of us who want truth and peace and free. Right? So it definitely dawned on me that the entire chilling effect that the State Department and the DOD and both parties wanted was felt for a moment. But to be honest with you, we have had vastly more whistleblowing since WikiLeaks and because of WikiLeaks than ever before. And the main reason is people should know WikiLeaks work is done. They gave a Dropbox to every newsroom in the world that they now use to allow people to anonymously tell the public what's going on. So every newsroom has the thing that was once WikiLeaks' prize invention, which is that form of anonymizing. So we've seen all this very much. Julian Assange paid a price in jail and in seclusion for 15 years where he was isolated and imprisoned in order that we all have far more whistleblowing now.
That's so right. That's right. But when you use those drop boxes, you aren't telling the public, you're telling journalism.
That is true.
And these, as we've learned, are, I think, somewhat different things.
But even the good sites, places like Drop Site News and stuff, places that are all the new little kind of sort of little saplings that are coming up, they all have this technology too. And most of all, they have what the system wanted to do was to tell you, like Prometheus, do not fuck with us or we will tie you to a rock and kill you. And they did that to Julian. And by doing it to Julian, they hoped that the rest of us wouldn't use these drop boxes. But we're seeing far more. Look at how many of us now deal daily in encryption. That is a cancer that they hope to contain, and it spread like wildfire. And I think WikiLeaks is to be credited alongside Bitcoin with having figured out how to create a freedom mechanism for individual people, whether it's to go through good sites or whether it's traditional legacy sites that are corrupt or anything in between.
I think people are most, like, you get very attracted to the drama of the thing. I basically tell anyone who wants to understand how the world works, when they're from some J random country that's not America. Unfortunately, we don't have any WikiLeaks cables from America, because those would be super interesting. But there's no American embassy here, which is why we've never had a revolution. But but if you read, you know, I'll tell like people in like say France, go read the WikiLeaks cables from France, and they'll look at these cables and they're like, holy crap, the American embassy in our country is there to supervise our government. It's not there to relate to it, right? You know, and the actual exploitation of those documents and the ability to tell the story that is in them is zero. Actually, nothing has really happened with that stuff. It hasn't really had an effect. And so when you look at, say, you know, DropSite is an example, like when you look at the effect of most of this stuff, it's just basically engagement on X for 36 hours, right? And you know, the actual sort of, you're still in a way cargo culting a kind of democracy, because you sort of expect this realization that people's government is not exactly what they think it is to have this dramatic effect to do something, but that's just world fallacy.
Yeah, I understand. Hey, Matt, can I hawk my swag for 30 seconds? I have swag. Wait. We have little swag on that table that tells you about the movie and gives you a chance to see it, and they're little thumb drives, dodgy-looking drives, but they have secret documents on them and some video that nobody has seen. They're on this table. Take them at your own risk.
Wait. Guys, Eugene's going to premiere his film. It's a really good film. Most films are shit. It's a good film. June 27th, Bitcoiners only. It's going to be the $6 billion man.com. That's where you're going to go to watch it. Eugene's awesome. The film's great. Julian deserves all of our praise. I mean, to your guys' point, I mean, I think the single biggest thing is when I grew up in the 90s, how many movies were the protagonist like racing away from the evil people trying to tell the world about what was going on? Then WikiLeaks was invented. You literally just uploaded it to the website. You're good to go. The whole movie plot just completely destroyed. Eugene, final thoughts. Thank the audience, and then we're going to bugle you off. Love you, bro.
Thank you, audience. Please come see me and Jack at the Nakamoto on Wednesday, 2:20 p.m. You'll learn much more about the movie and why Jack is so invested and has been so supportive of us.
Thank you a lot. Let's get a screening at PubKey. PubKey DC, PubKey New York. We'll find a way to screen.
We want to do that.
That sounds
sure.
good. You guys going to come out for that?
Thank you all.
Let's give it up for Eugene. Thank you, Eugene. Woo.
Thank you. All right, so, Peter, you and Curtis have done, what, 9 hours together? 9 hours of podcasting?
We're like lovers.
We're like lovers at this point?
How many, so close.
How many children?
How many children?
Brain children.
So, since the last one, what were the comments? What would be the follow-up? Like, what has changed since the last interview you did with Curtis in London?
So, there was a clip that Elon Musk retweeted that was kind of interesting.
That certainly helps.
I think after each interview with Curtis, it's a moment to just go away and just reflect on the things you've heard about and like a deeper acceptance of the reality of the world, and that probably the only solution to the situation we're in now is we have to kill everyone.
I wouldn't put it that way.
That's So my job now is to radicalize Curtis Yarvin. No, I'm joking. It's just like, there's just a deeper reality of acceptance.
Well, you know, I was remarking earlier today on my favorite hell site, X, that, you know, someone did this survey of liberals on political violence. And they're like, basically, yeah, everybody believes that, like, you should kill for your ideas, right? You know, on the right, we don't quite believe in killing for ideas. We actually just believe in our ideas. But when the left, it's more they believe in the killing and then the ideas sort of help them along. But, you know, one of the things you realize is that the reasons why there's so little violence in our society, and even crime is down. But crime is not down because people have become more civilized. Crime is down because people are turning into human job blobs of jelly. And what you see is, you know, 40% of, like, Democrats under 30 are, like, totally ready psychologically for a civil war. They believe in civil war. They're just not actually, like, put together enough as human beings to actually, like, form militias and going around, you know, starting death squatting people. And the reason why you see it's only these few nutcases that basically break under this ideology is that killing is just this killing and fighting is incredibly normal human male behavior. And our society is, in a way, so etiolated, you know, so energic, so it has just lost so much energy and power that it's, even though everybody, 40% of young leftist Americans believe that Donald Trump should be killed, very few of them have the gumption to actually do a Naruto speed run at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I don't know, did he actually run like this?
It was a Naruto. It was a good Naruto.
Did he actually Naruto?
He did.
It was fantastic. Holy shit.
We were talking about the time traveler theory earlier on the first panel. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen it.
We don't need to dive into it again.
Get it back.
But building on it, Curtis, what you just described, is it a powder keg?
A power what?
A powder keg that if...
I love it. A power keg?
I'm right behind.
Powder keg.
Curtis,
powder keg.
He's over here.
Powder
Curtis,
keg.
Curtis, he's over here.
Like, is the reaction to this buildup of...
Yeah, the problem is the powder is all wet. There's actually no powder. It's like, actually, there's a powder keg of wet powder because Americans are ideologically and psychologically, they're ideologically ready for a civil war. They're just not psychologically ready for a civil war.
I have a question. Do you honestly think it's left only, though?
No, I think that actually people on the right are also have big dreams and are also all pussies. I don't think anyone on the right will ever use their, like, you know, millions and millions of
guns. Yeah, but it's still probably around the same number, no?
I think that the right is a little bit meeker. I think that actually you don't see as many calls for there's no, you know, world of, like, people trying to assassinate Obama the way they're trying to assassinate Trump.
There was, like the hanging motifs and stuff during Obama.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, that stuff is so...
And that was also a long time ago, right? Like, the next Obama, don't think the right would have...
No, I think there's actually... There's just very low energy. And no, I don't... You know, and you also have to bear in mind that when you see examples like that, you have a giant journalism establishment that is dedicated to presenting that story to you.
Yeah.
Right? And there is a giant... And it is not dedicated to amplifying the story of, half of American libs under 30, like, are ready for civil war.
Curtis, are you worried that during your debate with Mike Brock that he might kill you?
No, he seems soft.
That's going to be an amazing debate.
That'll be fun. I don't know how you got this guy to come to this event, but.
He's a masochist.
Well, can I roofie him? Can I get, you know?
Do you have a game plan for Mike?
I'll just be myself, man. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good game plan.
Well, we were talking about Elon as an example, somebody who's not wielding the potential power correctly. Is there anybody out there who is doing it correctly in your mind?
That's a good question. Yeah, there is, but you haven't heard of them, and I wouldn't want to harsh the buzz. There are people who kind of understand it, but it's like, you know, they're not the headliners.
What's your opinion on Peter Thiel?
What about Peter Thiel?
What's your opinion on him? Do you think he's harnessing his power effectively? He's obviously a very powerful individual. He's probably relatively aligned with Elon.
No, I wouldn't say he's a relatively powerful individual. I think he has a fair amount of money. I think that there's a lot of people from his network and the new admin, certainly. But, you know, the new admin is, I mean, it's a lot more powerful than the last Trump admin, but it still isn't really anything and could kind of easily disappear without a trace, right? It's just like, you know, people who talk about the Trump administration as being powerful don't really know anything.
Is Bukele an example?
Sorry?
Bukele, is he
gonna? Sure. I thought you were talking about Americans. Yeah, no, Bukele definitely gets it.
He's basically American.
He's basically American. We're all Americans now, but, you know. He's not eligible to be our president, so, you know.
Well, we could change it.
Lord, I've seen what you've
done. Well, yeah, I mean, we could. I mean, you know, if they elect Bukele or Elon Musk, you know, he wins the election, what are they going to lock the doors of the White House? You know, I don't know. but yeah, you know, there's like, a lot of my feeling about the second Trump administration was that I feel like the stuff that they're trying now, they should have tried in 2017 so they could have learned in 2018 that it didn't work. And they have to sort of go through kind of actually trying to operate the government as Republicans, which is ridiculous.
Curtis, I listened to 8 hours of you with McCormick. This question didn't come up, and I was... If I could ask you any question, this would be the question to ask.
Sure.
Peter's looking at me. It has nothing to do with you, Peter.
That's not what I'm looking at you.
What is your opinion on Michael Saylor?
What is my opinion on Michael Saylor? I don't have really strong opinions on Michael Saylor. I guess that I would say, in general, there's hodling and there's hodling. And when you're hodling outright and your HODL is not mortgaged against any debt and there are no stop losses on your HODL or whatever, and you're basically truly naked net long, you know, that makes you a true HODLer. And if you basically borrow to buy Bitcoin, or if you put in stop losses on your Bitcoin, you should know that you're basically creating what is essentially a fragile market, where the market has the impression of basically naked buying pressure there, but it is not naked, and it basically turns into negative velocity if you hit those stops. So Saylor, of course, has borrowed extensively, you know, and also funded in equity to buy Bitcoin. Equity is a little different, but there's a world where those stop losses get hit, and Saylor has to provide negative buying power instead of positive buying power, and hopefully that doesn't happen.
So, Curtis, I don't think you know this, but I've written a newsletter for the last 9 years, started in June of 2017. The first ever letter I wrote was on your Bitcoin is money, Bitcoin is a bubble piece for gray matter. That was written in, April 2013. Has your view of Bitcoin changed since then at all?
Fascinating question. It's changed in some ways, but the fundamentals hasn't really changed. It's like, what makes Bitcoin not a tulip is that it has a path to an exit, which is a positive sum exit. If it's just a tulip, like an average shitcoin, basically, it's like a meme coin. Like a meme coin, you know, everybody knows that it's a zero-sum game. You get in early, you make money, you get in late, you get taken, right? And that's a kind of, you know, sort of gambling game that people play with each other. And the idea that Bitcoin is different from that fundamentally revolves around the idea of Bitcoin taking over the role of the monetary standard as a result of just the insane constant dilution in dollar world. There are, of course, other competitors for that role. There's gold. There's anything that's a limited supply asset could basically do that. So I was just talking to Bitstein about this. So in the situation that we're in at present, basically, it's like, all right, what are the things that block Bitcoin from going to that next level? What are the things that block the exit? Because if we imagine a world on the Bitcoin standard, the price of Bitcoin is like 5%, 2%, or something of its eventual value. If it goes to zero, of course, it's infinity over its eventual value. Those are two very starkly different things. One of the things that I concluded really erroneously in 2013, or one of the things I concluded correctly, is that it would be very easy for coordinated government power to basically shut this thing down. It has gotten less easy over time. It would be
it's still technically doable today, but I don't know that it's politically doable. But the two main obstacles to Bitcoin's growth today are sort of the continuing ramp up of the Bitcoin universe are, I would say, number one, that, you know, Bitcoin has crossed over and gone mainstream. And when you go mainstream at all, you suddenly have a problem, which is that expanding, once you're mainstream, you're no longer an unknown. So expanding your pool to include everyone became, in a way, it's a cultural problem, because before Bitcoin was well known, it was an unknown, and people could have, you know, people had optionality in terms of their responses to it. Now, nobody has optionality in terms of their responses to Bitcoin. It's like, you know, 15% lovers, 85% haters.
That's why people are talking right now while you're speaking.
Yeah. Yes. And exactly. And so moving the haters into the lovers column is a hard problem. Now, reality can basically do that. The second problem here is that as soon as Trump got elected, previous to 2024, Bitcoin had maintained a somewhat politically independent position, or crypto in general, if you accept that word. And after 2024, it became very solidly identified with the MAGA side. And so basically, as soon as our good friends from the lib world get in power, it's going to be much, much harder to bribe them. And because it's going to be much, much, much harder to bribe them, the idea that they will really go on the attack in ways that they haven't done before, even when they're like prosecuting people for tools or whatever, for coins, that's a serious risk.
Yeah, they're going to come at us hard, pretty much.
Yeah, and we're not coming hard. And that's the fundamental asymmetry that you see in all of these systems. It's like, we're vegetarians. We're not in it for power. They're in it for power.
And just huge shout out to Marty for shouting out himself for 9 years of the newsletter, by the way. Yeah, that's a good idea. Peter, as a British citizen, how do you feel about Iran?
Subject. He's not a citizen, he's a subject.
Oh, yeah. As a British subject, are you going to run for... what do you guys call it?
Parliament?
Not Parliament.
Counselor.
No, what's the president?
Chairman.
Prime Minister.
You Prime Minister?
Are you going to run for Prime Minister?
No.
I'd vote for you. I can't.
I'd vote for me, but I'm not
doing
it.
Can I vote for you?
No.
How do you feel about Iran accepting Bitcoin as payment? Is that a validation of all the years of what Bitcoin did, or is it a slap in the face, or is it nothing?
It's just another one of those things. I don't know. It's just like, is it true? Is it real? How's it happening? Should I care?
Well, let's pretend
it's real. Do I defend it because I'm a Bitcoiner and it's Bitcoin for rent? I didn't find it interesting.
I'm more interested. Maybe you will find this more interesting. Obviously, with the Peter McCormick show, you've been very dedicated to local politics in the UK. Is the show making a difference in your mind? What is the environment in the UK like now? Do you feel like the tides are shifting in terms of how people are viewing their relationship as subjects with the UK government?
It may be similar to here. We are heading towards an inflection point, which is the next election, which is very clearly, are we going to go somewhat right-wing or super left-wing?
I feel like we're doing way better than you.
Restore is just somewhat right-wing?
Yeah, Restore is somewhat... Yes, right wing, but certainly more free market right wing, more libertarian right wing. Whereas Reform is more establishment right wing, which means you still get decay. They just slow the pace of decay. Whereas the left will accelerate the decay. So, like, if you ask me, what do I want in the next election? I mean, I haven't voted in three. My preference would be Restore.
You haven't voted in three elections?
No.
But you're a political commentator. Isn't that your obligation?
No, my obligation is to vote for positive change, not retards. And in the next election, I think the problem we have is that Rupert Lowe, from my perspective, is the closest to understanding what the UK needs.
We have no idea who Rupert Lowe is.
He's kind of our part Trump, part Bukele, part Millet. He's like looked at the best bits that you need, strong rule of law, but you also need free markets. You need to be honest with people. But like that would be the best option. The problem is what he's selling, I don't think the country has the stomach for, enough of the people. So I don't think he can build a big enough tent. And so we're likely heading towards a hung parliament, which probably means a left-wing coalition of some combination of the Green Party, Labour, and Lib Dems, which means we're going to go even more left, even more socialist, more crazy shit. So that's the inflection point we're heading towards. The historic British culture is going to work against it in that people are always like, oh, what is British culture? It's kind of like civility.
You know it when queuing. You see it. You know it when you see
it. Yeah, it's civility, queuing, like, and...
Queuing. Lining up is our culture.
Well, no. Lining up is...
Civility.
No.
They have great lines.
It's a high-trust society.
Yeah, how a country queues is a sign of how civilized it is. And we queue the best.
No,
anymore. You used to.
Lee Kuan Yew of Singapore came to study in London in the 50s. And he saw honesty boxes where people could just, you know, drop a coin and take a piece of food or whatever. And he's like, wow. Like, you couldn't imagine in that country today.
In Luxembourg, at the end of the wineries, they have...
That's not in the UK.
No, but it's an example of a high-trust society. Okay. They have the wineries. At the end of the winery, they have these... like glass vats where you can go and help yourself to test the wine. Now, in the UK, we would smash it or steal it right now because we're a low-trust society. And we weren't a low-trust society. And so if you had to, like, crystallize what Rupert Lowe is, he wants to restore a high-trust society. But to do that, ironically, you have to do some quite... severe things that the country doesn't have the stomach for at the moment. So we're probably going to go more left-wing, more socialist, more Marxist, and hopefully he will hold his line. And I think his time is in 8 years where he goes, I told you.
Oscar, they don't have the stomach for sending them all back. Is that the line that...
Wait, what?
Sorry, say that again.
The UK population doesn't have the stomach for sending them all back. Is that what it is?
It doesn't have the stomach for so many things that are required.
So the issue is immigration?
No, because you can fix the immigration, but if you don't fix the economy, everyone will still be poor and pissed off. So immigration is one. Rule of law is another. Education is a third bit. It's all restoring. Restore is a great name. The high trust civil society we have. That is our culture.
It's like, I mean, all of these things go together so completely that, you know, it's like if you walked into a housing project or whatever and you met like a welfare mom, average welfare mom in the housing project, and you were like, what is wrong with this person's life? You know, it would be like, where do you even start? You know, maybe you can help me with this, Peter, because, you know, I have a family problem related to this. You know, my daughter is... just a college entrance age, and she decided it would be super neat to study medieval history at St. Andrews. And so she gets into St. Andrews, very, you know, and then she goes and spends a week in Scotland. And, you know, after spending a week in Scotland, you know, my daughter is, I guess she asked about reform or restore, but I couldn't help but really think that what she really wanted was the British Union of Fascists and or maybe the Spanish Armada, you know. And what really, you know, shocked her was like how, in a way, people seemed as accepting of this as like cows marching into a slaughterhouse. Like, would you... Is that too strong? Or, I mean, Scotland is hellish in ways that England is not, maybe, but like...
I mean, the problem with democracy is that it gives a vote to everybody. And
Peter has a vote, which is an issue.
Well, I don't use it because it's a waste right now. But if... I mean, I talk about this all the time. Like, Bastiat was very clear that... the role of the state is to defend life, liberty, and property. And as soon as it gets into the role of redistribution, it inverses the morality. And then redistribution becomes a tool of voting. And then you accelerate decline. because people vote for theft. And so universal suffrage is essentially a doom loop. It's a doom loop.
So then because, how do we decide it, though?
Sorry?
How do we decide
well,
it?
That's a, I
well,
think...
we kill them.
You said that.
No, I'm joking.
But you said we're there. Like, I think a good wait, question wait. Is, like, do you accelerate or do you try to fix it? Do you just let
I mean,
it go?
Like, you can accelerate the decline, which is Zach Polanski. You can slow the decline, which is reform. Or you're fortunate enough to have perhaps a Bukele or Malay who can get through. But
Malay hasn't actually done shit, right?
Well,
like,
I mean,
Bukele
depends
like,
which propaganda you read.
Bukele deserves credit, right? Bukele deserves severe credit.
He does, but Malay deserves credit for at least trying the libertarian project.
But Malay is not still yet not fully in control of the Argentinian government by any means. He doesn't fully control the Senate, and so you know it's still. It's still a civil war there, really. Whereas,
also, like, he's going to Israel and kissing the wall. Like, it's kind of bullshit. Malay's bullshit. Bukele's interesting. But my question to you, Peter, is if universal suffrage isn't the answer, then what suffrage is the answer? Like, who votes? Like, what's the practical answer, right?
I mean, what I would do is I would not allow anyone under 25 to vote, but I would allow them to not pay tax.
I like that.
Yeah, give them an advantage. I would not allow anyone who's retired to vote, and I would not allow anyone who is a net taker from the system to vote, and I wouldn't let women vote. No, I'm joking.
Here he comes.
Kinda.
All right, one last question.
Wow, you just offended 200 attendees.
But they know I'm right.
Or at least 20.
All right, so I would say the Urbit project, which you created, is one of the most acceptable non-Bitcoin broader crypto projects. We have Groundwire here. There's a development, I think, in Urbit to bring more Bitcoin onto Urbit. A good friend of mine, Christian Langalis, is responsible for bringing you to this weird event that we have here. How do you look back on the decision to go with Ethereum for the tokenization of the assets? And is it a priority? Like, how do you think about Bitcoinifying Urbit on a go
forward? How do I think of Bitcoin from an Urbit perspective? I think that eventually, you know, Urbit is just a namespace and an identity system. And I think that one of the things that you sort of, when you look at crypto as a whole, if we may say crypto as a whole in a Bitcoin-centric environment here, I think one of the things that was basically a very understandable choice by Satoshi, but one that has been inherited by the whole system. Satoshi thought like a system software architect. And it's great to think like a system software architect. I'm a system software architect. It's great. But what a system software architect is trained to do is to basically create minimal solutions that are basically very well layered and let other people come in and solve the next layer of problems. That, I think, has not worked out really super well in the crypto world, because if we build it, they will come is something that has basically killed a lot of projects. Even Bitcoin struggles very hard with if we build it, they will come form of becoming not just a store of value, but an actual kind of economic system in a way. And so I think that my desire is very, very, very much to build end-to-end solutions and to basically put in missing pieces. So I think it's very clear, for example, that identity is a missing piece in Bitcoin as it is in many other things. Ethereum added accounts, but it didn't add identity. Zcash has added ZK proofs. There are many people working on smart contracts that are sort of Bitcoin related. Of course, the argument for proof of work, I think, is very strong. But, you know, fundamentally, you need an identity system for the crypto world. It needs to be a sort of genuinely anonymous identity system that basically can't be based on human meaningful names. And I think that we would be living in a different world if that feature set had been designed into Bitcoin and other blockchains earlier. It's sort of unbelievable that on Bitcoin, for example, or Ethereum or anything else, you can get a transfer from someone and you're like, why did you send me this money? And you can't message them back.
to be like, why did you send me this money? Right? And it's because basically people were building minimal solutions in a way, but I think the time has sort of come for end-to-end solutions. So I think that, you know, for Urbit as an identity protocol, you should be able to hold any asset in your Urbit, and you should be able to move your Urbit onto any chain. And that's basically, which are two different things, by the way. And that's sort of the, you know, the solution we're looking for in the future. So, yeah, Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin good, Bitcoin very good. But basically, everything needs identity. That's my pitch.
I agree. What do you guys think? Should we leave it there? You got one more question?
Can I bring someone up?
Sure.
Madex, are you in the audience? Madex, the single best Bitcoin artist in the world. I believe you are in the audience. Can you please come up to the stage? Mr. Madex, please.
Madex!
The only good Canadian standing.
Voila.
If Curtis had his way, the only person who could vote in Canada would be Madex.
Yes, we have to get the Canadian perspective before we wrap up here.
Thank you. I don't know where to go with this.
You brought him up.
How does it feel being the best Bitcoin artist in the world?
Well, thank you. It's high praise.
All right, thank you, Madex.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
Wait, I have a question. Do you actually say asphalt?
I say asphalt.
But the people in Canada say asphalt. I've heard that.
I don't really talk to Canadians that much anymore.
Madex, we were talking about this last night, though. You're a little bit more defeated than I've ever seen you in terms of Albertan secession. What's your solution here?
The case in Alberta is very bullish. We have close to 50% support with no leadership and no party. There's going to be a referendum vote in October on whether we leave Canada or not. But, you know, if you go macro enough, we all know the saying that if I can control the banks, I care not who makes the laws. And then the next level up from that is if I can control the resources, I don't care who runs the banks and I don't care who makes the laws. So my proposal for Alberta is that we go to the Rothschilds and we say, hey, isn't like this middleman Canada like really fucking annoying? Why don't we just cut them out and get some kind of deal going where we can create a new sort of Switzerland here? And that probably sounds pretty crazy saying it to a room of Bitcoiners, but I don't really know how else it's gonna happen without the super macro powers getting involved and making it so.
Because if you win the referendum, what happens? Do they just say, okay, great, you had a little fun election, but nothing happens?
Well, supposedly, what will happen most likely is it'll go into lawsuits. Like the federal government will sue the provincial government, and it'll just be a total shit show. And there's a lot of money on the line. Like, people don't realize that Canada would just not exist at all without the productivity of Alberta. We're the capital generator for the entire country, and we send them $10 to $20 billion a year as part of our communist equalization payment system. So there's a huge financial incentive for Alberta to split off, and we're just hoping that we can get some international support on that, and obviously we need the backing of the United States, because at the end of the day, it all comes down to violence. So
The people of Bedford support you.
Yeah.
How's your
militia game? Do you have much of a militia going on? Armed groups, death squads?
Death squads.
Canadian death squad.
Yeah, no comment.
Smart. Okay, Thomas. I'm glad we brought a Madex. You want to wrap it? Wait. Before we wrap it, guys. Block sponsored this show. They were one of our many sponsors here. They launched the BitKey yesterday. If you are currently holding Stretch, I know you're guaranteed 11.5% interest, but you can make way more money if you hold real Bitcoin in your BitKey. Super easy. Do it today. Go to bitkey.world.
Hell yeah. It has a screen now.
Wow. That's what we call
amazing. Also, since we're on the note of shilling, Matt tells me I don't sell myself enough. So I'll just say that as Madex, I have the ability to create very incredible things, especially in fine art and pretty much any medium. So the only shortage is good ideas.
Madex.art. You didn't even show the fucking URL, bro.
Guys, let's give it up for Peter, Madex, Curtis Yarvin.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining
us.
Guys.
Thank you.
We're going to hang out. James O'Byrne is going to be playing the tables back here. Love you guys.
Stay humble, stack sats, motherfuckers. Take it.